Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
Let me talk about the fertilizer issue.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack responding to a reporter's question about the current status of high fertilizer prices.
You know, I think there are many aspects of what drives fertilizer costs. I'm certainly encouraged by the announcement today coming out of the Iowa Attorney General's office of a number of state attorney generals essentially commissioning a market study, which we obviously will be providing assistance and help on, to make sure that there is an understanding of all the forces behind increases in fertilizer costs and making sure that farmers are not being taken advantage of. And that's my biggest concern here in terms of the current situation.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
While we have higher supplies, we've also experienced over the last couple seasons higher demand. And we've really narrowed carryout stocks in the global market for some really important commodities like corn, soybeans, and wheat. And that's the context we find ourselves in today with tighter global markets. Markets always more sensitive when global markets are tighter.
Dr. Seth Meyer is chief economist for USDA, speaking recently at USDA's Ag Outlook Forum.
And when we look at this, these new higher prices that we've observed, when we talked the same time last year, we had turned a corner recently in the fall of 2020. Commodity prices had begun to rise. Demand looked excellent. The Chinese had come back into our domestic market, and that was really lifting corn and soybeans and bringing other commodities along for the ride. Later on, as we experienced obviously drought, especially for spring wheat within the United States, we saw wheat begin to build its own price strength. Export controls by the Russians added to that strength, and most recently, geopolitical events in Ukraine, along with drought conditions in South America for soybeans, have really added to those prices. So what we're observing is very good, very strong prices.
There are a lot of fundamentals providing support for these higher prices, but he points to South America.
The other aspect of this that's really provided some price support over the last several months is what has been drying conditions in Brazil and Argentina and a shrinking of that crop. That has really provided us some additional price support through our own harvest and beyond. And, you know, since May of this year, when we first started our initial normal weather forecast for Brazil, Argentina, Paraguay, we dropped production by more than 21 million metric tons. And we made our last forecast during February, at February 9th, at a period when the crop was still under critical development phases. And weather has continued to play a role there. When you look at that map in Brazil, you can clearly see contrast between moisture in the southern areas and moisture in Mato Grosso in the northern areas. And so in this regard, we'll continue to evaluate the crop. The market has clearly sensed a production cut. And I really emphasize the graph on the left, which zeroes in on production for those countries, because just to note that the market is sensitive to these kind of changes under the tight conditions that we're in.
Of course, at the end of the day, it's great export demand and even domestic demand driving prices higher.
We had a record exports last calendar year. And when you look at this, I'm really talking about when the pandemic first started and we were discussing food away from home and food at home and the changes and shifts in demand. You know, early on in the pandemic, you saw folks trade off of food services for food retail, so food at the grocery store. Somewhere along the line, we decided that we were going to return to some food services, but we didn't stop buying at the grocery store. So in essence, demand has been up for the last 12 months. Domestic demand for food in the United States has been very strong. Expenditures have been running higher. So we came back to eating out, but we didn't stop buying at the grocery store either. Now, we've seen lately a little bit, you know, we've seen some higher prices. We've seen some softening of demand in some key, in some meat products. But again, demand has been very strong over the last year. And I think that that's a story, particularly for the livestock market. Just that another element of price strength.
It's Agriculture Today.
Every drop counts. Introducing the Patriot 50 Series Sprayer from Case IH that puts every drop of product exactly where you want it. Enhanced LED lights, a cab designed for all-day comfort, and more precise spraying technology. Because just like you, we know every drop counts. Visit your local Wiley implement for details on the new Patriot 50 Series Sprayer.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
Did you know that the world-famous Café du Monde has always used cottonseed oil to fry their beignets? Cotton Board invested over $1.5 million into cottonseed research and marketing last year with Cotton Incorporated, including research on the health benefits of cottonseed oil compared to other oils. Our goal is to make cottonseed oil the preferred cooking oil in kitchens across the country, like a Café du Monde in New Orleans. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton.
This is Agriculture Today.
Vitamin A, it helps minimize calf scours, which, you know, that's the number one neonatal death loss in our beef cattle operations. But it also helps those cows be able to slick up after they calve. You know, you don't have near the retained placenta in those animals if you have appropriate vitamin A. Vitamin E is also really important to help with selenium absorption. And, you know, most people recognize the importance of selenium when you're getting back into your breeding season.
Jamie Lynn Farney is a Kansas State Beef System Specialist talking about the importance of vitamin supplementation for expecting cattle.
More people are concerned about the deficiencies or issues we see with the vitamin A. One of those, as we're getting ready for calving, is weak calf syndrome. That is the most classic symptom of vitamin A issues. Those calves just aren't thrifty. If they do get up and nurse, the cow's colostrum's pretty low quality. And that's where the vitamin A helps with higher quality colostrum. And so those calves just are set back for the entire life if they do make it past birth.
Vitamin A is available through forage.
Our sources of vitamin A, there's quite a few of them out there. Legumes, alfalfa in particular, can be a very high source of vitamin A. Anything that's lush, leafy, green forage has a lot of vitamin A. Our winter cover crops that are growing right now, they are very high in vitamin A. So anything that's lush, leafy, and green has really high vitamin A. Yellow corn, the vitamin A precursor is called keratin. Yellow is keratin. So your yellow corn has a little bit of vitamin A in it as well. And so off of your diet, you can get quite a bit of vitamin A.
But keep an eye on how old that forage is.
They have found that in forages, within 3 months in alfalfa, you can have 20% the original amount of vitamin A you had had when you put it up green. There is a tremendous amount of degradation in your vitamins. If you're feeding two-year-old hay, I would just say there's no vitamin A that's available to those animals. If you're feeding alfalfa even 7 months later, there's only 10% of the original vitamin A amount. And that's similar in just about all your forages that had any accumulation of vitamin A. It disappears or degrades over time.
What are some of the factors that can influence the degradation?
Temperature, humidity, light, oxygen, and acidic pH can all impact vitamin A stability. That's why I recommend when you're looking at your mineral tag, there is a manufactured date on that tag. You really don't want to be feeding or expecting the amount of vitamin A that was made in there to be there 6 months later. So, you know, really kind of having a new manufactured mineral about every 6 months is a good idea.
So just pay attention to what you're mixing.
You can lose 3.5% per month by mixing that vitamin A in with your other minerals. If it was with organic trace minerals, you get another, or, you know, it's about 3% per month loss in your vitamin A. But if it's with inorganic trace minerals, it's close to 9% per month loss of your vitamin A. So that 6 months just gives you a good cushion. You can maybe play and stretch it out for a year, but, you know, keeping it fresher is going to help you reduce the amount of issues that you have with your vitamin A degradation.
It's Agriculture Today.
Now is the time to sell. Demand for used equipment is high, and Purple Wave Auction can help you reach the largest community of online buyers. Whether you have a single item or an entire fleet, Purple Wave Auction offers a hassle-free way to sell your equipment. Visit purplewave.com. Straight, simple, sold.
The advantages that we have to provide financial services in the ag is top-notch. It's the best in the country. We have a capital management plan that we all celebrate and hold very close to us at Capital Farm Credit. And that capital management plan is premised on the fact that we're a cooperative. So as a cooperative, we believe that the members of the cooperative own the capital of the cooperative. At Capital Farm Credit, together, we're better.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
8 episodes that unpack the 1970s and the 1980s and ultimately the farm financial crisis of that latter decade.
David Widmar is co-founder and managing partner of AEI.ag and a podcast on that site.
Why I bring that up is specific to the Russian grain embargo of January in 1980. And what happened there is Russia invaded Afghanistan, and Russia had been, the USSR, the Soviet Union, invaded Afghanistan. And so one of the responses that the U.S. government used in that situation was to embargo the exports of U.S. grains, particularly wheat, to that country. Russia was a big importer of commodities at that point in history. And so there's a lot of lessons we can learn from that, and we were talking about this and thinking about this earlier today. One of the key lessons is, over time, their history might rhyme, but it doesn't repeat itself. Russia had gone from an importer of grain in the 1970s to a major exporter today. So the second lesson we can learn there is, while we were preventing our grain from going to Russia in the 1980s, it still indirectly got there, and we still had global trade. The pricing wasn't very good. A lot of producers, the farm level prices were pretty low. Today, thinking about the Russia situation, Russia might be blocked or blockaded from many of the global markets, but that wheat and their fertilizer and their energy will probably still find its way onto the global market. It probably isn't going to, help the price situation a lot. There'll be a lot of trade flow issues going on and supply chain issues, but those commodities will still be available on the market. And the second thing I'll just add to that is, like the 1970s, we were in a period where there's just a lot of uncertainty and a lot of moving pieces, and it's almost impossible to predict how all of these factors will unfold. And I'll give you one specific example with respect to the Russia and Ukraine, are the sanctions. It's going to be very difficult to predict just how these sanctions will unfold as they target the Russian economy, but also they have global implications. I think the interest rate question is a very good one. It's very timely to think about that. All signs in, January and early February was that the Federal Reserve was going to raise interest rates in their March meeting. We'll see if that continues to play out. But I think for producers, we need to step back and untangle that interest rate uncertainty in perhaps three different questions, three buckets. The first one is, what's the probability of the Fed raising interest rates in the first 6 months of 2022? And I think the latest situation in Russia might change our forecast for that a little bit. The second bucket is, what's the probability of a significant change in interest rates here in 2022 in the short-term rates? So will they move maybe 6 interest rate hikes for about 150 basis points of movement is what we're thinking about. But finally, probably the most important to agriculture is, what happens with long-term interest rates? And those long-term rates, such as the 10-year treasuries, those have been increasing. Those have gone up more than 125 basis points in really the last 6 to 7 months, and the Fed hasn't even moved short-term rates. And so we have to untangle all this, because the farm sector is more linked to these long-term rates than the short-term rates, and the long-term rates have been moving well before the Fed has actually moved short-term rates.
It's Agriculture Today.
On the phone with Joe Guzman, Director of Sales for Equinom Smarter Sesame. Joe, 2022's here. You have lots of opportunities in sesame.
That's right, Stephen. We have grain handlers with 2022 agreements ready to be signed. Smarter Sesame makes a great rotational crop for producers who are planning for the new crop and season. With inputs on the rise, Smarter Sesame is a great choice for low input acres.
Joe, if somebody wants to find out more, how can they do that?
They can call 1-833-SESAME or visit equinom.com.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
But while we talk about trade in aggregate, it is, you know, we're reminded all of the time here at USDA about some of the challenges. And we obviously understand the challenges in trade. While we think about bulk commodity trade by soybeans, I'll remind you we sell containerized soybeans. We sell lots of containerized other products. And so we have seen some challenges that USDA is attempting to address in handling some of these export shipments, because they do represent a significant value of U.S. agricultural trade.
Dr. Seth Meyer is chief economist at USDA at the recent Ag Outlook Forum.
So I the trade story is great news, but I also want to remind folks that, hey, you know, we want to have a broad-based trade. Some of our commodities are highly dependent on commodity exports, and we're keeping, containerized exports. And so we're keeping an eye on that. Let's talk a little bit about farm income as well, too. You know, 2021, a very good year for farm income. 2022, looking to be still a good year. You know, the dashed lines here show the long-run average, so both net cash farm income and net farm income showing above-average long-run values, down a little bit from the prior year, but still good farm sector results.
And he builds on this idea of supply chain disruptions and what it means for ag.
So I think the first period, we talked about this a lot last year, which is the initial COVID shocks, shifts in demand, meat and poultry processing shutdowns, really allowed us to have higher consumer prices and lower producer prices as we had processing issues. As we began to resolve that there in the fall of 2020, the Chinese came in strong into our market. Our own domestic demand continued to strengthen. And what we saw is rising commodity prices temper the declines in prices that we observed on some of these supply chain adaptations and fixes. Okay? So that's kind of that second phase where rising commodity prices at least tempered the declines in prices we saw as supply chain issues were resolved. Now we are kind of in this last phase where this latest phase where commodity prices have kind of topped out, strengthening again now, but we continue to see some inflation, generally speaking, across food price inflation, across the food sector. But let's dive into this just a little bit as we think about this, and I'll go back to my point about some of the early food price inflation being driven from the meat side of the basket, and now we're seeing perhaps a broader-based inflation that is beyond the meats and even some decline in meat price inflation. So what we have here is kind of quarters, the average for quarters 1, 2, and 3 for 2021, and that average inflation, and then you can compare that to the last quarter of 2021, and you can see, okay, meat price inflation, not the driver anymore. As a matter of fact, even some declines in meat prices. You can look here and you can see some declines in beef, but perhaps a broadening of inflation to other commodities. So when we look at this inflation, you know, farmers in the United States receive between 14 and 15 cents of the dollar at retail. And you know, when we think about commodity price inflation, there's a lot that goes on beyond the farm gate that influences price inflation. And so I think that that's one of the things that we're observing is perhaps a bit of a broadening of this and some of the lag in increases in costs finding their way into a broader retail pricing for food.
Dr. Seth Meyer, Chief Economist with USDA. It's Agriculture Today.
When it comes to farming cotton in West Texas, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers rely on Delta Pine brand cotton. Bred, tested, and made in West Texas for West Texas growing conditions. Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with strong cotton from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
What can you get for 2 cents these days? How about new, more efficient wheat varieties? Better market access for Texas wheat producers and increased demand to your product. Each year, the Texas Wheat Producers Board achieves these goals by investing producer contributions to promote wheat through research, education, and market development. Who knew 2 cents could be so valuable? A message from the Texas Wheat Producers Board.
This is Agriculture Today.
You know, this is one that changes with every administration, and we know that it's become basically a political lightning rod, and as it gets kicked back and forth between Democratic and Republican administrations. And when the Biden-Harris administration took over the federal government, they're now having their own chance to talk about WOTUS.
Scott Yeager is Chief Environmental Counsel for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association in Washington, D.C.
So what has just come to a close, really the close of an open comment period, just took place about a week ago. And the comment period was for the public to engage on a proposal that was put forward on WOTUS. And basically what it would do is put WOTUS back to the 1986 definition of WOTUS. And it's kind of a short-term effort. And then it buys them time, and by them I mean the Biden-Harris administration, about the Biden-Harris administration time to craft their own definition of WOTUS through a second rule. So we just finished part one is where we're at in that two-part process. They just closed the comment period, and NCBA used that opportunity to bring forward some really strong comments. We found through analyzing this proposal that it basically has some pretty troubling issues in it for cattle producers, not the least of which is that it erases all of the really important agricultural exclusions that we've had in place for a number of years that were contained in definitions of WOTUS that were written by both the Trump administration and even the Obama administration. Both of those definitions of WOTUS had clear agricultural exclusions for things like stock ponds and farm ponds, drainage features, and things, other types of features that you would find at a farmer ranch. So those are gone under the Biden proposal. So that's something that we very strongly oppose and are suggesting that the government fix throughout this process. So that's where we're at in WOTUS. They'll probably finalize a rule in the next weeks to months, and then we'll see what's in that final rule. And that final rule is going to be what becomes the law of the land until they craft a step two rule. So we're deep in the what they call the administrative rulemaking process, which is what the government has to. Those are the rules of the road for the federal government in issuing these rules. So we play a role in that all along the way to make sure that our grassroots cattle producers are heard in that process.
Another big issue, the debt. David Kamens, Deputy Director of the National Economic Council.
The president came to office focused on making sure that we are paying for our priorities and helping to address, you know, the kinds of debt that we pass down to future generations. That's in terms of things like failing infrastructure, which is, you know, we pass that down and we're now making investments to fix that. We pass down to future generations the kinds of huge costs that are involved with climate change. We have a plan to help try to address that. And then there is federal debt. That is another debt that we would pass down to future generations. Right now for this year, we're already seeing the deficit come down significantly. In the first 4 months of this fiscal year 2022, the deficit is 60% lower than it was in fiscal year 2021. And in fiscal year 2021, it was lower than it was in the prior year before the president took office in 2020. So deficits are coming down as the economy is returning to strong growth and as we leave this emergency. And looking ahead, the president's plans reduce the deficit. That's what he's trying to work on right now as part of the Build Back Better Reconciliation bill. We don't just pay for those investments by asking the very richest Americans and the largest corporations to pay their fair share. Those plans will reduce the deficit over the long term.
It's Agriculture Today.
For years, cotton growers have had a trusted partner when it comes to choosing their varieties. NextGen brand cottonseed from America. You can depend on NextGen varieties for performance and yields year after year. And for this year's season, there are several new Bolgard 3 Extend Flex varieties available. Oh, and one other thing. Americott is now offering Cotless seed treatments to protect your seed investment against your early season challenges. To find out more, contact your local NextGen representative or seed dealer today. Americott. All we do is cotton. All the time.
AquaYield regional agronomist Dr. Tracy Carrillo talks about using NanoPro to improve your burn down.
NanoPro is a nanoliquid technology that grabs the molecules of your burn down herbicides. It enhances the delivery of your herbicides, making them more efficient. You oftentimes see a 3-to-1 return on investment. This will stretch your chemical use up to 30%, which means you're saving more money, especially with the availability and volatility of chemicals these days.
Find out more at AquaYield.com.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
So why would a landowner think about a solar lease?
Interesting question from Howard Halderman, who's president and CEO of Halderman Farm Management Services.
And as I think about it, there are some key reasons why you might think about this. One is just the farm and family income. We're going to talk about lease rates here in a second, because my job here is to talk more about the commercial aspect of this. But this is an opportunity probably to look at 2.5 to 3 times the farm income that you've been achieving if you just compare it to a cash rental rate. You can secure the farm's generational future. What do I mean by that? Well, if you're farming 5,000 acres and you have 500 acres go into a solar farm, with the revenue that comes from that, with very little cost to you, the landowner, if any cost, basically that could be a funding source that helps secure the generational future of your farm on into the future. You diversify your income stream. You're basically farming a different crop. You're using, instead of using sun energy to grow corn or grow soybeans or wheat or whatever crop you're growing, you're actually just producing electricity, and it's with no additional costs. You enable your farm to grow. I would suggest, and I think one of the pushbacks that we've seen to solar here in Indiana is that the people who are able to have a solar commercial scale unit on their project, on their farm, well, they might be able to pay more competitive cash rents. They might be able to buy more land. So could you this enable your farm to grow and expand because you've diversified this income stream? It is a very low cost of entry for the landowner. And then there are some environmental benefits beyond the economic that you see on solar. Underneath those solar panels, they're going to plant some sort of cover crop. It's going to reduce erosion. You know, it's not going to be bare soil underneath those panels. It'll have some kind of crop underneath there. It may even include strips of a pollinator habitat. So that enhances the bee population in your community. And at the end of the day, you get reduced runoff of water, soil, and fertilizer and pesticides. So in theory, around a commercial scale solar development, you're going to have less impact on the environment and the community around it.
Halderman was a recent panelist on a Farm Foundation forum and talked about how this can actually enhance a community.
When these large-scale solar developments come into a community, the increased assessed valuation of those solar panels, of that development, of the wind turbines, is all picked up by those developers. And that increases the assessed valuation of that county, of that township, you know, however that is done in the various states that you're located. That could either be used to reduce real estate taxes because you have a higher assessed valuation. The tax bills, the amount needed by the county is the same. So it could be reduced real estate taxes for everybody else, or it could be increased tax revenue if the rate stays the same. And one would argue that you could look at improved infrastructure, better schools. Maybe your football stadium gets a turf field instead of a grass field. Maybe you improve the roads or bridges instead of gravel. The roads become chip and seal. Maybe broadband can be spread throughout the county. So it really would be up to the county to decide how they use that additional tax revenue. But you can improve the quality of life. You could, at the end of the day, attract more people to your community and really promotes the long-term viability and growth. It's basically that concept, all boats will rise, because of this kind of new utility scale electric generation facility coming into your county.
It's Agriculture Today.
Stock up and save on John Deere filters and packaged oil at the South Plains Implement semi-annual sale. Now through February 28th, receive 10 to 12% off John Deere filters and packaged oil for large ag equipment, and 10% off compact tractor home maintenance kits and oil when you purchase filters. No payments, no interest options available on qualifying purchases. Some restrictions apply. See us for details. With 14 locations, there's a South Plains Implement near you. South Plains Implement, where farm meets family.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com and texascrp.com, to view many properties we have currently listed in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Give us a call at 800-933-9698 to discuss these properties in detail. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The first step in the process is to take a look at what agreements were reached and what agreements were implemented, what portions of the agreements were implemented, and what portions were not, either not implemented at all or not fully implemented.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack on trade with China.
And suggesting that before you can get to a next phase, you've got to make sure that the first phase is completed satisfactorily. And I think it's fair to say that that requires more action and more activity on China's part. And I'm sure that that's part of the discussion and negotiation between Ambassador Tsai and her counterpart in China is, look, if we want to get to the next level of this arrangement, we have to make sure that the first level has been fully implemented. And it's obvious that has not been the case, not just in agriculture, but in a variety of other areas.